Are we exposed? Security teams ask this every day. Vulnerabilities across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos hide the truth, and attackers are watching. Tenable unifies your tools, teams, and data so you can spot and close risks fast. Tenable's AI-powered exposure management gives teams one view of risk, helping them focus, take action, and close critical exposures fast. Visit Tenable.com. Tenable. Your exposure ends here.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast. The podcast that's, as well, just as interesting as we want to make it. That's different, isn't it?
Oh, that's putting the blame fully on us, Martin. I feel like that's a bad idea.
No, it's a good idea. It's a good idea. How are you guys? I'm with Alex. How are you?
Oh yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm just considering the ramifications of that intro.
What I've just said.
No, that's good. Yeah, everything's still the same with me.
As it is with the world.
As it is with the world right now. Yeah, literally nothing else to add. Let's move on to Robert.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Martin. Yeah, everything's fine here, luckily. Plodding on, as always. Losing the ability to speak, apparently. And getting on the cusp, the threshold of having to get some clippers and take it to my hair. But we're okay for now. We're okay.
Yeah. Do you have them available? Or do you need to get
some? No, that's the thing. I'll have to acquire them somehow. Maybe.
I see.
I've had a neighbour. Yeah.
I've had some that was supposed to be delivered to me like a week ago, but I'm going to call them out. Hermes. Bloody rubbish. Absolutely terrible.
It's not coming. Yeah. It's not coming.
Yeah.
You'll have it by Christmas, hopefully.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'm going to need to take a bread knife to it at this point.
Oh my God.
Oh no. Just point the serrated edge outwards and not towards your skin.
Yeah. I think it looks pretty good, though, at the moment. Yeah, it's a good length.
It's just because I've got headphones on at the moment. You can only see the front. The back is... it's like I look like Joe Exotic from the back.
Nice. Who doesn't want to look like Joe Exotic, right?
Yeah. Nicolas Cage is going to look
like
Joe Exotic.
That's a fine look.
You know, yes. Before we get stuck in, Nicolas Cage playing Joe Exotic, I was so excited about. Partly because this is the beginning of Nick Cage's comeback, but secondly, because I'm always like... what bad hair can Nick Cage have in his next movie? And I was like, he's run out of options now. And then that happened. I was like, yes, he's found another way to have terrible hair in another movie. Well done.
It's true. Yeah, true. He goes for it, doesn't he? I mean, he would have been the first long-haired Superman, wouldn't he? But it didn't happen. And I, you know,
thank goodness.
I'm gutted to this day. To this day, I'm still gutted.
We truly are in the darkest timeline. There is a timeline out there without coronavirus and with Nicolas Cage as long-haired Superman. So,
it would have been majestic. It would have been so funny. It would have been so good. Gutted.
Had the potential to kill superhero films dead.
There would have been nothing else after that. Actually, something I have been doing this week is going through the Marvel films. Not every one, of course, but I've been starting from the beginning and watching them. I'm up to Thor, so not very far.
Okay.
What's that number four?
Yeah, that was the fourth one, wasn't it? Yeah.
And I mean, all Marvel films, to me, they're all like between a 4 and a 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
Like, out of the ones I've seen, I've probably seen about a dozen. It's like there are none that are like truly like so terrible that you'd be like, I can't watch it. And there are none that are crazy good either. They're kind of fun.
Yeah, it's like the Marvel Cinematic Universe is, its greatest strength is its greatest weakness, which is that it's so consistent in quality. It's really impressive. But that consistency means that they're all much of a muchness, really.
Yeah. It's basically a Pizza Express without Prince Andrew.
Marvel films are a Pizza Express without Prince Andrew.
There we go. You heard it from me first. What have you guys learned this week? Who wants to go first?
Oh, Alex can go first.
Okay. I learned something really cool this week, actually. I mean, it's quite... sinister as well when you think about it, but You know the Iran-Contra scandal?
Yes.
Did you know that Marlon Brando once tried to buy the rights to the movie for like that whole incident? He tried to buy the rights for a film, but the CIA was able to derail it by creating a front company to outbid Marlon Brando for the rights to the film.
I didn't know you could exclusively buy rights to a film about like a
real historical event. Incident. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I learned that as well, apparently, but it doesn't really give much information on how that kind of came about. I'd need to look into it a bit more, but
still, that's crazy.
Yeah. But also it gets crazier. Do you know who was in charge with doing the, putting the front company together and outbidding Marlon Brando for the rights?
No, who?
Colonel Oliver North.
The guy who was responsible for the Iran-Contra.
The guy who was responsible for the Iran-Contra.
Wow.
How messed up is that?
How is he still in charge? Shouldn't have been able to do that.
Well, so yeah, I mean, this, I don't know when this was actually, that this was attempted. This film, actually, hang on. Oh yeah, I'm not sure when it was that Marlon Brando tried to produce a film about it, but...
Well, I guess the difference is...
But it was never made.
...that it wasn't illegal, but it was still dodgy, and that's exactly what the CIA does.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's, yeah, no, 100%. It's interesting as well, just knowing the US's government, the US government's role in the film industry, and like how often, especially when the military is involved in films, they need to change the script around or make sure certain things don't feature. Like, apparently they changed the script in Meet the Parents. The CIA changed the script for Meet the Parents. How mad is that?
They, I'm trying to think.
They asked that Robert De Niro's character, because you know he's ex-CIA.
He's an agent, yeah.
They made sure that his character didn't possess an intimidating array of agency torture manuals.
So that means that the CIA must have had some kind of either knowledge of what was being made, or do have knowledge of what's being made across Hollywood.
Yeah.
Or they approached the CIA saying, is this okay if we do this? And the CIA were like, nah.
Yeah. And there are some films that did that, like Independence Day. They approached the US military because they wanted, resources like tanks and all of that. So that they could use them in the film. And the US military said, okay, fine, we'll do that, but we need to go over the script with you. And then, in fairness, I can't remember the director's name.
Roland Emmerich.
Roland Emmerich just turned around and said no. I think they wanted to take out something that was essential to the plot.
Yeah.
The Area 51 thing, wasn't it?
It was Area 51, that was it. I can't remember. Yeah. They wanted to remove all mentions of Area 51. Which wouldn't have worked, really.
No,
yeah. No, they're falls down the plot.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, that's what I learned this week. The CIA's role in silencing the movie industry.
Yeah, it makes me wonder what other films are being silenced as we speak.
Yes,
exactly.
Does.
Yeah.
Well,
how about you guys?
I learned something regarding the future. Which is nicely positive news. You've probably heard of hydrogen fuel cells, which have been talked about for years as a possibility for clean, green energy for vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I learned this week that Germany has had two hydrogen trains running for a few years now.
They kept that quiet, didn't they?
Yeah. They're just going along, doing really well. They're investigating more. And in fact, Britain, last year, the first, prototype hydrogen train was launched, for lack of a better word, just in September, I think, last year.
Mm-hmm.
So,
nice.
Yeah, wow. Hydrogen trains just around the corner, hopefully. Maybe not.
What's the problem with... Because I know that... I remember reading that the problem with hydrogen was the making of the... turning it into a fuel, like condensing it into that state. Has any improvement been made in that?
I think so, yeah. So if I remember correctly, the issue for hydrogen fuel since it was first mooted many years ago was the fact that extracting hydrogen is really tough. Even though it's abundant, obviously, H2O, it's in water, it's really hard to extract it as a raw element for fuel. And then there was an issue with stabilizing it, because obviously when it's on its own, it's fairly unstable. So hydrogen fuel cells. But I remember, I may be wrong about this, but I remember at secondary schools, this is in the early noughties for me, they announced that they had made a successful, stable hydrogen fuel cell. The issue then became that there wasn't the infrastructure existing, you know, for petrol stations or gas stations in America, to install hydrogen fuel for cars that would run on hydrogen.
Yeah.
So it kind of came to a halt because it was all about, we need to massively invest in having a hydrogen fuel infrastructure for delivering hydrogen to all parts of the country for people to actually use it. But then, you know, that kind of investment means it's really, really expensive, it's really difficult. So I guess that's why they switched to trains, because it's slightly easier to do. So it's thrilling that they've...
That's some positive news.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, it seemed... Do you think there's going to be a kind of... Because I know electric cars are becoming massively popular. They're soon going to overtake petrol, right? Or maybe not soon, but in the next couple of decades.
Yeah, we're getting there, yeah.
Yeah, and they're trying to stop manufacture of them in the next 15, 20 years, aren't they? Especially in the UK, at least.
Yeah. Do you think...
Petrol cars, sorry.
Yeah.
Do you think electric will win out, or do you think it's going to be... Both hydrogen and electric cars are going to be the future.
I'm happy for both to be.
Yeah.
More initially, that stabilization issue. I mean, I'm no chemist, physicist, scientist, whatever you want to say. So I don't know exactly know how they've managed to protect. But I'd imagine that if you're in a car crash, that's when the car's full of hydrogen, it could be quite dangerous.
Oh, Martin, you're such a pessimist.
Just, I mean, in fairness,
I imagine there's a way to protect it, but
in fairness,
just from a layman's point of view, it sounds quite dangerous.
Maybe by this point, security things on cars and sensors will get so good that the car will basically prevent any crashes, and no one will ever have a car crash ever again.
Because that's how it works.
Well, once you reach Minority Report, where all the cars drive themselves and you just sit in it and don't have to do anything,
up the roads vertically,
yes. Up the side of buildings, it'd be great.
Yeah.
What did you learn this week, Martin?
Well, I learned, it's short and sweet, but about the Vandals, a little bit about the Vandals. You know, the Vandals who sacked Rome? They sacked Rome in 455 AD.
And
so that's where the word Vandals comes from. Yeah. So that's the first thing.
Vandalism.
People didn't. Yes, Vandals. So the Vandals, they were a barbarian Germanic people, and you know, they famously sacked Rome way back when. But... they weren't actually Vandals. You know, the word Vandals, you know, disruptive, smashing things up.
Yes.
They, in fact, did not destroy the city, and they didn't burn it down, and they didn't kill most of the people like a lot of the other barbarian tribes did. They're actually very good-natured, and history has been a little bit unfair to them. So that's what I learned this week.
Which would explain why Rome is still standing.
It would.
So what did they do?
Oh, they just, you know, they took it over.
Yeah.
But they weren't mad. They didn't go mad and kill everyone like a lot of other tribes did.
Hmm. Fair enough.
Took some money.
Yeah.
Got rich.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Conquered, but didn't pillage and rape.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good kind of conquering. That's how to do it.
It is. I mean, they might have done a little bit, but not enough to be known as Vandals.
But maybe that's
the youth of today.
Maybe that's why history remembers them badly, because they left witnesses alive, Martin.
No, that's true, actually. No, good point.
They left a lot of witnesses to remember them.
That's true. People love Genghis Khan, right? And he was the world's most successful conqueror for a very long time. So
yeah.
It's because he killed everyone. No bad press.
He killed them, or you know. Anyway, news this week. Do we have any crazy, weird news stories, or just things that are interesting?
So I've got a story. This was sent to us actually on Discord. I think this was Peaswad. So thank you, Peaswad.
Ah, Peaswad, thank you.
I thought this was really interesting, and it's basically could be the key to solving the coronavirus pandemic. And the key could be llamas. I'm just going to let that hang there for a while. Llamas, yes. And the reason is because their antibodies are particularly good. I never realized this, but llamas are apparently pretty well known at like being good at dealing with viruses and being used in research for viruses. And it's because, unlike humans, they have two antibodies.
Okay.
So antibodies basically are a way of the body. They're like little structures that connect onto pathogens, so like the virus, and basically tell the body to destroy this, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And we have one, but the llamas have two. One that's kind of the same size and makeup as human antibodies, and one that's smaller and more precise and is more able to detect the coronavirus, because viruses are smaller than bacteria.
Yes.
I wonder, okay, is this theoretical? I imagine it's theoretical, right?
No, this was published by a group of researchers in a scientific journal this week called Cell.
They've been testing on llamas already? Straight away, first thing they do, get the llamas in.
I don't know if this is actually something that they've tested already.
Yeah.
But it's it's something that they're looking into.
Interesting.
But yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And I didn't realize that llamas were so used in the fight against viruses.
No. It's quite funny when you said we have one antibody. I was just thinking...
Just one type of antibody.
One single antibody. It's like, well, the antibody's dead.
Yeah.
That's the end of it. They're a different type.
Unexpected that llamas would be so resilient to viruses. They just seem... I don't know, is the environment they live in particularly viral? Or they just, just happen to have...
It's strange, isn't it? Yeah. I'm not sure where that is.
The other thing that's interesting is how they'll then use this research. So they say, okay, llamas are fantastic at fighting off coronavirus.
Yeah.
What then? We're not crossbreeding with llamas, are we? I mean, what's the next step?
Well, actually, we're not crossbreeding with llamas. But... another good thing about their antibodies is there's a lot of crossover with like human antibodies. So I think there's a way that you can fuse them together or something to that effect, where you can take the kind of information from one and transplant it into the other, so that it could essentially become a human antibody and have that information on the coronavirus pathogen to tell the body to get rid of it.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Left field, isn't it? It sounds exciting. Very left field.
Mm.
I've now got this image in my head of a future textbook for a history class in school talking about the coronavirus pandemic. And then there's just this kind of like propaganda poster of a llama astride a mountaintop, with the sun behind it. And saying...
As soon as you said a picture of a llama, I was just thinking of a llama. Before you even said propaganda, I was just thinking of a llama wearing a crown and a cape.
Basically, yeah, that kind of thing. Just a llama heroically.
Just along the same lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the real man's best friend. They were there when humanity needed them.
we need you, and it's the llama pointing its finger directly at you.
Yes, it's a little hoof. It's a little cleft toe.
Yeah.
And then you look up from the textbook and your teacher... is half llama from all the crossbreeding.
Oh my god.
Really long neck.
To South Park. It's just a South Park episode.
Yes.
hopefully that's some optimistic news. Or pessimistic, depending on how you look at it, that we're so desperate we're turning to llamas.
No, that's good news. Good news. Yeah. Bring on the llamas.
I think it's good news. I'm not sure yet.
I've got it's not news, because this is an old story, but I came across it the other day and I thought it was fantastic. It's also about animals. This time it's about an ape, an orangutan. In residents of San Diego will probably have heard of this orangutan, whose name was Ken Allen. Active.
Ken Allen,
yeah.
He sounds like a 70s comedian.
I know. Named
after the zookeepers, I think. Ken and Alan, I think, or something like that. So he was a notorious escape artist, and he knew what he was doing. In total, he escaped from San Diego Zoo 9 times over the course of his life. The first first few times, he wasn't... these aren't counted as part of his escape artist, but it started when he was young. As an adolescent, every night he would unscrew the bolts of his cage and explore his nursery, and then go back into his cage before morning and put the screws back in.
That's some Planet of the Apes stuff.
Right? I know, right? That's literally Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And this is, so this doesn't count as part of his escape attempts, because he didn't actually try to escape. He just got out of his cage, went back in, tried to keep it secret. And then throughout the 1980s, once he became an adult, he tried to escape many times. And including... sorry. So many times that the zookeepers had to keep upgrading his pen to make it more secure. And they installed a moat. They installed a high wall. They installed an even higher wall. They installed...
Those cordets.
Yeah. Electric wires. An electric wired fence on the top of the wall to stop him climbing over it.
Just let him go.
Just let that guy go. Eventually, they did a total of $45,000 of upgrades to his pen to try to stop him escaping. And then they gave up on upgrading his pen because they couldn't make it more secure. And what they did instead was they brought in some female orangutans to keep him distracted. And
madness.
It kind of worked. He seemed to be happy for a while, except for the time when one of the workmen accidentally left a crowbar inside the pen after going inside to do some work one day. And Ken gave the crowbar to one of his new female companions and got her to prise open the window so he could climb out of it. Then one other time, I told you they installed a moat. One time there was a big blockage in the drainage system and the moat dried out. And as soon as it happened, he just walked across and tried to escape again in broad daylight. But the reason he never actually successfully escaped is because every time he got out, he would just walk around the zoo taking photos with people visiting.
Just let him do it.
Let him do it. Just let him spend his whole life just wanting to hang out with people. Yeah. Man, that's
sad, isn't it?
That is sad.
I mean, it's still quite dangerous to have him wandering around, I guess, but you know, to get everyone to just sign a disclaimer before they come in. Like, the orangutan's wandering around. If it rips off your face, it's your own fault.
At least, like, take him for walks or something, you know?
Yeah.
Let him get out and about.
Yeah.
At least let him ride a bike.
That's Ken Allen.
I forgot his name was Ken Allen.
Ken Allen.
I think that's the cruelest thing in the whole story, to be honest.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I love it. Well, my news story this week is equally ridiculous. It actually happened last year. So again, like yours, Robin, it's not necessarily news. But they're reviewing the process of why this news story has come to surface at the moment. So that's why I'm bringing it to you now. This man, I don't know how to start here, but a man was given a present to go and fly in a £70 million fighter jet. As a present. He was 64 years old. Obviously, his family have a fair bit of money to allow him to do this. And so apparently you can get these flights with the French Air Force. You can go and fly in a jet. Of course, someone else, a trained military personnel, flies the jet for you, a proper pilot. Yeah. But you can sit in there and, you know, have your go at being cast at Top Gun. This man, he's 64-year-old, never actually displayed any interest in going and flying in a fighter jet. But, of course, if someone had paid for you to do this, you're going to go and do it, right?
Yeah. It's a risky present.
It's a risky present. He didn't particularly want to go and do it, but he decided to do it. And during the flight, he pressed the ejector seat button.
Oh.
So he was gripping on for dear life, and by mistake, as it rapidly ascended, he pulled up the lever and shot out of the top of the plane 2,500 feet.
Oh dear.
Oh.
Yeah. Helmet flew off. Luckily, his parachute opened and everything, and he only had minor injuries.
Must have been a bit of a shock.
Yeah. What's crazy is that the pilot who's flying this plane realized afterwards that if one of you pulls the ejector seat, it's meant to eject both the pilot and the passenger, but it just malfunctioned. And so so he could have theoretically, or should have, crashed this £70 million plane into goodness knows where.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that mad?
I feel like someone definitely disabled that on purpose, just so plane wasn't ruined in case that ever happened.
Yep.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So what was the pilot's reaction? Did he just not again?
I imagine he was incredibly shocked, but managed to land the plane fine. But don't you think it's mad that this person had no aviation experience?
Yeah.
And was put in a seat next to an ejector seat button.
Yeah,
that is a bit.
You think? I'm sure they would have. They must have told him, "Don't pull this lever. Whatever you do, do not pull this lever." Surely. Yeah.
And what I'll do is I'll add on the picture of the man in the parachute in the plane, because there's a picture of him coming down in the parachute and the plane just flying past. Just bizarre. So I'll put that there. But I mean, that's mad, isn't it? Would you go on this kind of? Would you like this kind of present? I mean, is it? It's cool, isn't it? But cool. I think I want a little bit of experience before I just jumped in one of those.
Yeah. It's not something that would appeal to me. If someone genuinely, if it was an offer, I think I'd probably do it, take them up on it. But I'd be terrified.
Yes.
This is the situation that leads to this kind of thing. I mean, you're almost identical to this poor French pensioner.
I would be at risk of pulling that lever by mistake.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. No, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it after this.
After hearing this,
yeah, no, thank you.
Oh man, but yeah, pretty what crazy, a mad pretty story. Crazy.
Wow, I'm glad he was okay though.
He was fine. He was fine. Stressed out. Don't think he's going to be flying anytime soon. Like none of us. But
it's like the worst gift he's ever received in his life. I bet.
Yeah, but he's got he's got a photo from it. He's got a story to tell.
That's true.
He hasn't got the helmet. The helmet flew off when he was ejected. But he's okay. He's okay. So, guys, before we move on, I'd like to thank our patrons first for supporting us. Incredibly generous, as always, this month. It's been amazing. And, of course, we've got our patron-exclusive episode, which we recorded before the show, which is good because we can tell you what it's actually about.
Yeah.
And related to airplanes, it's actually about a aviation disaster where a woman survived the fall from 33,000 feet to tell the tale.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in that, link in the description, and there'll be a card on screen now because we have cards enabled now for external sites, which is quite exciting. So yeah, check out the card, check out the link in the description. If you fancy listening to us talk about that, then please do.
Yeah, she didn't even have a parachute.
Yeah.
Not even a parachute. Incredible. Yeah, I mean, that'd be fine.
Really great story. Yeah.
Yeah, remarkable. Any other bits of housekeeping from you guys?
No, just a great big thank you to all our Patreon supporters. Yeah. And I think we'd like to talk about comments that some people made on our last podcast. Just looking at some of the feedback, because the question there was about millennials and baby boomers as a stereotypical example of are the generations more divided than ever, was the big question last week. And some of you guys had some really interesting things to say. So first comment is from Margot, who says that in Australia, it is compulsory to vote. If you don't turn up, you get a fine. Which, I wish it were like that to be honest.
Yeah.
No, I think that would help.
I mean, there's an interesting argument there, isn't there? Because there's also the point that, well, people might just turn up to the voting booth not having any idea of anything and just hit the first name on the box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then is that really fair? Because there's that whole argument. Isn't there an argument over there of whose name comes first in case that is to happen?
Right. Well, surely
whose name comes first on the...
As long as you should have an official option to like spoil your ballot. You know, it's essentially another box to tick.
In fairness, I think there is.
But if you put that at the top, right, doesn't that solve it? No? Okay.
You've cracked it, Robin.
That partway solves it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It partway solves it. I'd expect people to, if they really didn't care, would just spoil the ballot anyway, right?
Yes.
You would expect so, yeah. But I mean,
I think most people have at least some inkling, whether it's based on fact or knowledge or based on their preconceived opinions of what they believe and which candidate represents that.
Yeah.
So I think that most people would at least, even if they're not massively into politics, they'd be like, okay, well, I think I'm more this side of the political spectrum or whatever.
Yeah. It's just a shame that you have to incentivize, voting by threatening people, not with fines and stuff. I much prefer, they've got a tradition over there where you get a free hot dog as well, don't you, if you vote? Or maybe it's not free, it's just kind
of... In Australia?
I think it's Australia. Seriously? Where, okay. Well, actually, I don't think it's free, but I think outside polling booths you get
Margot, is this stands. True? Tell us.
You get hot dog stands that pop up. And it's an election day tradition, I think.
Well, that's quite a nice idea, making it more of a out, a kind of social event. Yeah, exactly.
I like that kind of thing.
I mean, that could quickly turn into custard pies and splatting people who don't vote for who you want to. You know, it could quickly escalate.
Martin, that's you're true. Such a
you just see the worst in humanity, Martin.
Oh, I've seen the worst. I've seen things. I've got a post from Happy Cat Lady. I thought it was really good. Bit of a long one, but I'll read it through because I think it's worth it.
Okay.
So she writes, I imagine, Cat Lady, older and younger generations have always been divided to an extent, but in the boomer versus millennial situation, this is the first time, at least in a while, that the older generation arguably have it better. Millennials have to deal with climate change and fixing the economy. The boomers' parents lived through the Great Depression and World War II, and their parents lived through World War I. But boomers have just lived through the pretty peachy time in terms of finance, healthcare, technology, and social stability. And so when they typically complain about younger generations, as older generations often do, where the younger generations previously accepted and put up with that, we now for the first time feel this generation don't have the right to give us a hard time. Previous older generations have tried to make life better for future generations and were perceived by their children to have succeeded in this goal, whereas intentionally or not, boomers have done the opposite and it's clear to see and younger people are not happy about it. I thought that was a good comment.
What an insightful comment. Yeah.
That's a really good point. Yeah, because we are inheriting a world that is going to be irreversibly damaged by climate change, a lot of it accelerated by the baby boomer generation's use of technology, and of course an economic system that's really not balanced and only going to get worse because of its inherent flaws. And a lot of that is not directly the result of ordinary people who were born of the baby boomer generation, but is absolutely a result of the society they grew up in. And even though we've got the internet, that's not really a good substitute.
I think we have a right to complain if we are or millennials of the generation and generations after are the ones who want to fix those issues, right? If you don't fix them, then you're just continuing your legacy of kind of inequality and destruction. So yes, it seems like there's a right to complain, but it's not an unconditional right.
That's the thing, right? I think that was my main point in the last podcast. That really made it sound like we have a legitimate complaint against baby boomers. And we do. I do agree with those points. But I just think that if we were in the same situation, I don't think any generation would behave differently. They did have all the advantages, and they used that for their own benefit. But I think any generation would do the same.
Yeah, and I think we also tried to say this in last week's podcast as well, that we don't blame individuals on an everyday basis for making those what turned out to be poor decisions, because they only do what they're encouraged to do by society at large. And the problem is that society, led by politicians and mass media and big business interests, created that scenario. Anyone who's a fan of conspiracy theories knows countless examples of instances where governments and businesses have suppressed advantageous things that only now are we finally looking into and finally trying to develop on a mass market scale. We could have done it decades ago and everyone would be fine and we would stop complaining at saying okay boomer and stuff like that. You're absolutely right, Martin. We need to make sure that we fix the problems that we inherit.
Nice.
True. Alex, anything to add in terms of the comments?
Yeah, this isn't relevant to the discussion, but I think we've covered that. But Fiona McDowell says, I think you downplay yourselves too much. Your podcast is more than just interesting. I suggest finding a way to introduce the podcast without downplaying yourselves.
Oh,
which is very nice, I thought.
I mean, did I do that? I think you went too strong
in the other direction, Martin.
Actually, that's true, yeah. You've bigged us up too much. Yeah.
We've had this discussion before, though, guys. Like, I think, just interesting. For me, it was like, we're just going to be creating interesting stuff. Not, it's just interesting. You know, it's the intonation.
Yeah.
I mean, my line of thinking, I guess, is that if we lower expectations to the point where it's like, okay, this is barely even going to be interesting, then people will actually be pleasantly surprised, hopefully.
Yeah. True. But it doesn't necessarily get the subscribers in the door, though, does it?
Yeah.
In fact, anyone listening to this who hasn't subscribed, do that now, please. That'd
That's
be great.
True. Yeah. We've made it this far.
We don't really say that, do we? We don't really say subscribe.
No, we're not really like keen on selling ourselves that way. We just want people to, you know, have a good time.
Subscribe or don't, whatever.
Yeah.
If you've enjoyed it, subscribe.
Yeah.
Subscribe. I mean, already via our stats, most of you already subscribed.
This is true. Yes.
This is true. So thank you.
Yeah.
And hey, shall we be really shameless and say, if you like this, share it with all of your friends.
Oh yeah, all of your friends, even the ones that aren't really your friends anymore, but are still on Facebook.
What's that thing?
Smash that like button.
Yeah, that's the one.
Let's see if we can get it.
If we can get 250 likes in the first hour, we'll have a high five on the next podcast.
that's the one thing that's definitely not going to happen, Martin.
Definitely not going to happen. But do like it. Do share it. Write a review on iTunes if you can be bothered. It helps
us.
Yeah,
it does.
It does. Yeah.
Right, so for our main topic, we wanted to talk about the Tuskegee scandal, really, conspiracy. We've spoken about it before on our previous channel, but we thought we wanted to go into a little bit of detail and kind of get our thoughts and open a question up to our audience as well. And of course, this was a study that tested the untreated symptoms of syphilis on people between 1932 until it was stopped, shut down in 1972. And Silex, I know you've got a few facts about syphilis, some pretty grim and gory facts about syphilis that you like to share with us. They'll give a little bit of background as to what this is and why it was so terrible.
Yeah, so I think most people would have heard of syphilis before. It's a pretty nasty sexually transmitted disease. And that kind of just makes the ethics of this experiment and what went on even more horrifying, to be honest. Some of the symptoms can be pretty mild, but some of them can be pretty horrible and be fatal in many cases. It is something that can be treated from 1947. It can be treated pretty reliably with penicillin. Mm-hmm. But as you'll see in that experiment, this didn't happen. Syphilis is something that affects 6 million people every year. Mm. New cases are developed. And of course, it's a congenital illness, which means that it can affect people from birth. 215,000 infants are at an increased risk of early death because of syphilis every year.
Really? That's nasty, shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty grim. That's all you need to know, really. Horrible.
That's good. Yeah. I think you should give professional medical advice, Alex. Pretty grim. Syphilis.
Pretty grim. Don't get it. I mean, are there any ways you can prevent it, Alex? I mean, any particular specific ways?
Apart
from the obvious.
Well, this feels like I'm, you know, giving
Dr. you know, Phil
sexual health advice now. But
go on.
You can use condoms, obviously, and obviously, abstinence is a very, very effective method for not getting syphilis.
There we go.
That and condoms. And just, you know, open honesty with whatever partners. And what else do they say in school? What?
You are a school counsellor. Very good. Very good. Just jumping into Tuskegee and a little bit of background as to what went on. So it was originally called the Tuskegee Study of Untreated Syphilis in Negro Males. So a quite brutal and blunt way of describing this. So, as I said before, It was carried out between 1932 and 1972 by the United States Public Health Service. So this is at federal level, which makes it even more shocking.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's the people that are the forefront of looking after the nation's health. We're doing this. So the United States Public Health Service, they worked with the Tuskegee Institute, which is known as the Tuskegee University for people that live there locally to them. It's in Alabama. Historically, it's a black university made up of primarily of black students. And they wanted to test the effects of untreated syphilis in black men. Mm. One of the misconceptions is that the people in the study were injected with syphilis. And this, well, as far as we know, this wasn't the case. Sorry, my cat's fallen off the windowsill. But basically, it went untreated. They wanted to see what the symptoms were. So they studied 600 men. 399 of these had syphilis, but didn't know about it. And 201 didn't have syphilis and were used as a control sample, as you would use in any other non-horrible kind of scientific experiment, right?
Yeah.
So this testing was meant to go on for 6 months, but of course ended up being 40 years. I mean, even then, was only shut down because whistleblowers shut it down. Yeah. The men were from poor backgrounds. A lot of them were manual labourers. And by including themselves in this particular experiment, they were promised free meals and free burial insurance, which sounds a bit morbid and maybe something that people wouldn't go for today. But back then, it was kind of like quite a big thing to be able to know that when you died, you'd have this, you know, a burial, and also free medical care, which is it's kind of a darkly, morbidly ironic. When knowing what happened next. None of the men were told they had the disease. So they were tested. 399 of them had the disease, and of course we know about the horrible side effects, as Alex has said, about what these can be. And none of them were even told about it. Like Alex said, again, in 1947, when penicillin was discovered as an effective cure, they still weren't informed because the United States Public Health Service wanted to run this test. Said it was for 6 months. It wasn't. They carried on way after
40 years.
But the test was 40 years, but it was meant to be done until their autopsy. So one of the things that these people had to sign for was that they were allowed to have be experimented on after their deaths as well. So have the autopsies done, which doesn't sound crazy if you're kind of giving your body to medical science, but when it's something so horrible and not being told about what's going on with your own body, it adds another layer of dark, right? So a lot of these men, of course, during the Second World War in 1940s, were signed up to the US Army. I think 200 out of 399, at least, I think, signed up to the US Army, where, of course, they do medical background checks. And they were found to have syphilis, a lot of these men. But still, the US Public Health Service and the people at Tuskegee Institute tried to deny them getting this healthcare as well, which is just terrible. Wow. Absolutely terrible. Yeah, it's really bad. And there was the Henderson Act, which was passed in 1943, which is a public health law which required testing and treatment of venereal diseases by law. There was also the WHO's implementation of the Declaration of Helsinki after World War II, after they saw the terrible atrocities carried out on people during the Holocaust by Nazi scientists, all these medical experiments, which made it illegal to test on people without them giving their verified consent. So people without them knowing exactly what they were going in for, right? But of course, these tests still were carried out and nothing was said to these people long after these declarations came into being. So again, really, really horrible. Yeah. And it was only until 1966 when Peter Buxton, he was a venereal disease investigator in San Francisco, sent a letter to the national director of the Division of Venereal Diseases to express his concerns about what was going on at Tuskegee in the study. But of course, this was rejected because it's 1966 and not 1972 when it was shut down. So a few years passed, and of course, he was getting very worried about what was going on. And in 1972, he eventually decided to go to the press. And this made a huge, huge difference. It was on the front page of the New York Times. And of course, this caused a massive outrage and an outcry amongst the public, who were asking what the hell was going on. So as a result of that, Ted Kennedy, called an inquiry into this, and the study was terminated in late 1972. And after that, the government paid $10 million at the time, which is over $50 million today, provided free medical care treatment for the surviving participants, and this money, you know, for their hardships. Certainly doesn't excuse what was being done, but it was tried to go some way in rectifying those mistakes. So a bit later on in 1974, Congress passed the National Research Act, creating a commission to study and write regulations for studies involving human participants. So basically further regulated what was going on to make sure that this kind of thing didn't happen again.
Mm.
The human outcome of this was unfortunate. I mean, 28 people died directly from syphilis. Around 100 people died as a result of related diseases and maladies that arose from this. It was recorded that 40 wives of these men that were unwittingly involved in this experiment also caught syphilis, and 19 of their children had been infected. And I mean, here we're definitely talking about the minimums, aren't we? We're talking about the people who they could trace.
Yeah.
One of the things that's kind of happened since then is that there's been a huge distrust in public services from African Americans in particular, who obviously rightfully don't trust the government at a federal level when they're talking about getting involved in research and getting involved in having any kind of experimentation done, because they've been burned before, their community's been burned before. And you've got to ask the question, how much has changed from then until today, right? I mean, these laws, regulations have been put into place, but is America inherently a less divided country since at least the 1970s? I mean, it's arguable, mm-hmm. right? So, Robin, I thought you were going to give a little bit more info about kind of this public distrust that's grown in recent years.
Well, there's not a huge amount to add, really. As you said at the beginning, there is this misconception. I'm including this, by the way. I've often thought that in the Tuskegee experiment, the subjects were given syphilis, but this is not true as far as we know. But in a study in 1999, 80% of African Americans believed that the subjects of the Tuskegee experiment were given syphilis, which is a huge proportion of the African American community, and that's a huge proportion of the U.S. population to mistrust their federal health researchers. And it's understandable, though, isn't it? And of course, today we're seeing the impact of this generational mistrust in institutions, because right now in America, there are lots of COVID-19 studies taking place, and lots of people who have contracted COVID-19 and lots of people who, similar to the Tuskegee experiment, haven't contracted COVID-19 being invited by the federal government and by state governments and by local authorities or institutions such as universities to volunteer to be studied for not only the symptoms and the effects of COVID-19, but also the possible treatments for COVID-19. And as recently as this last weekend in May, the Los Angeles Times ran an article interviewing an African-American woman who was saying she was invited to join a COVID-19 study, but her instinct screamed at her, no, I don't want to do this because of Tuskegee. Mm. And she attributes it directly to that. Yeah. And I think what's really damaging about this whole, the Tuskegee thing, is that these people weren't just denied the medical treatments, but as Martin said, they weren't even told that they had syphilis. They believed they were being treated for all kinds of health problems, and specifically syphilis, but they weren't even told that they had it. And I think something you didn't quite mention was that $10 million payout, or $50 million in today's money, they sued for that. It was
the men
and the families sued the American government.
Yeah, it wasn't given willy-nilly.
No, and that's ridiculous, isn't it? Obviously, I hope it was an open and shut case. That I'm sure the judge found it very easy to decide who should win in that case. But that's crazy. And if we assume that that money was divided between the people who actually had syphilis and were denied treatment and were told that they didn't have it, so those 399 individuals and their families, $50 million divided between those people is about $125,000 each.
Yeah,
so just, my question is, if you underwent something like the Tuskegee experiment, which is 40 years of your life thinking you're being treated for syphilis, but actually having it and not being told, and your family is potentially getting it and giving birth to children with it, who then might spread it, as Martin said, is $125,000 enough for you to forgive?
It's not, is it?
No,
it's not even a gesture.
But also, it's like, these were people that were essentially being experimented on without their consent, through, you know, through not telling them and not treating them in how they were being told that they were being treated. So not only should they get a monetary payout, but people should go to jail for this. Like, this is the fact that it took 30 years for one person, one whistleblower to come forward. It's absolutely shocking. Yeah. How many people were working 40, on this? Yeah. And just kind of went along with it. It's
what worries me, amongst other things, is if these whistleblowers hadn't come out, if Buxton hadn't made his statement, he hadn't gone to the press. I mean, you're talking about some of these young men. Say they're, I don't know, 1932. I mean, they might be dead by now, right? They'd be very old if they were still alive. But at the same time, this would have been quite possibly been going on until the early 21st century. Because they're only going to stop this experiment after those people had died and they had done the autopsies on every one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
So if a few of them lived to a long, you know, lived into their 90s, say, that could take us past the 21st century if they were young when they were drawn into the study in the first place, especially if they're in the control group and didn't have anything wrong with them in the first place, right? They would arguably live longer. Mm.
I think the last person participant in the study passed away in 2004. So yeah, you're right.
There we go.
Into the 21st century. Mm. And I think it's probably worth mentioning as well that even though, yes, in this experiment, the US didn't actually inject people with syphilis. There was another study conducted between 1946 to 1948 in Guatemala by the US government, in a US-sponsored medical study where 700 men and women were intentionally infected with syphilis. Do you think there's any surprise with everything going on in America at the moment with like anti-vaxxers and all these COVID-19 conspiracy theories? Do you think there's any kind of surprise that people have so little trust in US healthcare workers and government bodies, given stuff like this has actually happened in the past?
I think it would be really, there's probably been done, but I would love to see a really detailed study looking in the generation, because I have a suspicion that the average age of people who subscribe to the anti-vaccine movement, who generally mistrust the government and in particular are more libertarian and more anarchist in their views, are probably of a certain age that you could probably pinpoint 1972, let's say, as the year that defines this generation. Because think of it, in 1972 to 74, you've got Tuskegee being exposed. You've got Watergate being exposed. You've got the end of the Vietnam War, where America suffers its first military defeat, essentially. And then you've got the Church Committee investigations into the CIA. Yeah. Exposing the family jewels and all the dirty tricks and assassination methods and despicable plots that they were doing behind the back of the American people in the name of defending them.
Yeah.
And of course, Operation Northwoods was revealed at that time. So you've got,
when was MK Ultra?
Pardon?
When was MK Ultra as well?
That was revealed. Yes, MK Ultra was revealed. Yeah, as part of the So you've got these really
1977.
Intense, just a few years, where the American government exposes all the bad things that the American government has ever done. And the unintended fallout of that, but I guess the inevitable fallout, is that ordinary Americans look at their government and say, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know.
That's such a good point, actually. Like, a lot of big, shocking revelations happened around in that decade.
Yeah. MKUltra, Alex, you're right. 1973 was officially halted. Officially.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so, yeah.
Yeah.
And let's not, with Tuskegee, let's not forget that in 1969, after Peter Buxton had blown the whistle, and tried to raise concerns. In 1969, the CDC reached a decision that reaffirmed the need for the study and even went to get the support from the AMA and the NMA to support the study. Yeah. So all of America's big federal health institutions knew about the study and were officially in favor of it before it was exposed.
It was very much the greater good, wasn't it? They thought that via these copious means that they something good would come out of it, right? This study.
Yeah. And of course, there's the elephant in the room.
Sorry, Robin.
I didn't realize you were talking, Martin. You broke up for me, and I didn't realize you were speaking.
Oh, sorry. No, you go for it.
Okay. Are you sure?
Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, and of course, there's the elephant in the room when you take into account the Guatemalan study as well, which is the racial element to all of this.
Yeah, exactly.
America is a nation, I think it's fair to say, founded upon racism. White people superior to black people, superior to Native Americans. And in the 20th century, America officially shed the cloak of racism, and it seems to have just extended it to its neighbors. The other nations. It's okay to do this kind of thing if they're not white or foreign.
The Tuskegee experiment was working upon an experiment that was carried out earlier in Norway. I don't know if you guys know about this. There was a Norwegian experiment a few years earlier where people had syphilis, and they were investigating the results of people having syphilis long term. The difference being that the Norwegian authorities, the Norwegian health authorities, didn't know that these people had it. So they were investigating it by retrospectively, right? They were going, these people have had it for a long time. Here are the results of them having it, as opposed to being like, okay, well, these people have it right now. Let's see what happens to them in the future. So they were actually being treated. So that's why this was carried out in the first place. It was kind of, they wanted to elaborate on that work. But of course, did it in a back to front immoral way.
Was there ever any kind of the results ever released from this experiment? Did it help in any way? Was there?
You know what? I don't even know. I'm not even sure. Yeah. I wouldn't be able to tell you,
because I know the results from the experiment in Guatemala was never released. I don't know if any research that was carried out there actually had any value in the long term. Well,
yeah.
So I'm not sure about this experiment, but...
Well, in a way, it's questionable what value it had anyway, because they had a cure by that point. Yeah,
penicillin,
It's a very good point,
That's true, yeah. So it doesn't seem like it was an experiment to find a cure. It was an experiment to see how it developed, right? I don't know how they justified it morally in their minds of knowing that there was a cure, especially by 1947. I mean, before then... there was, what did they use? There were a few things that could be used, but at best,
mercury might have been involved. They had quite a bunch of.
There was quite a few things that were toxic that relieved some symptoms, but were then toxic. Yeah. So of course, long term, you don't want to be doing that. I think a lot of the participants, they were told that they had bad blood.
Yeah.
Which can include syphilis, but it's also other things like being lethargic and a lot of unknown causes they just called bad blood. So
it was kind of
these people thought they had something wrong with them, but they didn't know what it was and thought that it was being cured, or at least attempts were being made.
I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that in the 1930s, the African-American community of Alabama weren't particularly well educated. And so being told you have bad blood is essentially a medieval way of hiding the truth. Yeah.
Yes.
Exploiting these people's lack of knowledge.
I think at the time, though, bad blood was a term that encompassed lots of different diseases. But of course, the people carrying out the experiment knew what those diseases were, or knew what the disease was in terms of syphilis. But they, of course, didn't reveal that information.
But we should probably point out, since I raised the specter of racism, that there were African Americans involved in the study. There were staff involved. And in fact, over the course of the study, I think 127 students of Tuskegee University were rotated through it. But the question is, how much did they know what was going on?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because it does seem shocking to me that after like 30 years, only one person apparently raised this ethics complaint or whistleblower, went to the press about it. That just seems shocking to me.
Yeah.
That everyone else just kind of went along with it.
I mean,
It does make you wonder how much they actually knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it does raise that question for sure. Mm. Yeah.
Hopefully it's not going on today, but I don't blame people for having an inherent mistrust, particularly in places like America, of studies like this with serious diseases. And especially the African-American community. Every time it hits the news that, and every time you hear about unfounded conspiracy beliefs held by the African-American community, I always look at them and think, I don't blame you. Like, you've got to have at least 100 years of being decently treated by your own country to start not believing in conspiracy theories.
I think at least a few generations, right? At least if your grandparents were treated okay, then you are much more likely to have not heard stories of how those closest to you have been so unjustly mistreated.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. But on a more positive note, are you guys up for a quiz?
Oh, yes.
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we know the drill by now. Buzzards, please, gentlemen. I said buzzards. Buzzers.
I keep my buzzard on a perch in the corner. Yes.
Buzzers, please.
Well, this week's slight complication this week because Robin's phone is out of action right now. So purely vocal buzzer. And I think Alex has kindly offered to do the same.
I think that makes sense. Level playing field.
So vocal buzzers this week?
What vocal buzzers have you gone for?
Mine's going to be, I have the high ground.
I like it. Very good. Good impression. Nice.
That was good. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Mine's going to be less good, but I'm going to attempt my iconic buzzer. Oh, the French. I've always been celebrated for its excellence. It's a California champagne.
You got to do the whole thing like you can't pause it. Yeah. I'm trying to pause it. Carry on.
Does it do anything?
Very nice. Song. Very nice.
It's fermented in the bottle.
Standard format, 10 questions, bonus question anyway, but if we're tied then it means something. Nice. Let's go. Knowledge general.
Oh, good.
Lovely. Good.
Let's see if Alex can keep his winning streak going.
Oh, yeah.
Let's
indeed. Okay, question number one. Which country is the only country in the world to have a flag that is not four-sided?
Oh. Wow. Okay. Well,
yeah. That's strange. Oh, my gosh. I think I know the shape, but I don't know what country it
just
is.
To add a little bit more pressure, this was asked in a quiz that I did last week, and I got it correct. So, you know.
Okay, well, it's clearly you know, yeah.
Thank you.
Well done. Congratulations.
1 point.
I have the high ground.
Yes.
Literally random guess, Libya.
No, it's not Libya.
Oh.
The French.
Yes.
Kenya?
No.
Oh, I see. No. That's green with a black triangle and a yellow line through it, isn't it? Kenya?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah. There's a triangle on it, so I see where you're coming from. I just said Libya because...
can we have a clue, please?
Mountainous.
I have the high ground.
Yes.
Switzerland.
No, Switzerland's... red with a white
cross, right? Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Toblerone. Like Toblerone triangular.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I can understand it.
Mountainous,
yeah.
Oh, the French.
Yes, Alex.
Nepal?
Correct, it's Nepal.
Yes.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, it's two triangles kind of on top of one another, red and blue, I think.
I want to look this up now.
Have a look. Have a quick Google. Have a quick bin.
Oh, yeah, wow, that is not the shape that I was actually expecting. I thought it was going to be kind of like a rectangle, but with a triangle indent at the end.
I thought it'd be like a tapering, just one triangle, not two on top of each other like that.
Pretty mad.
Strange.
Pretty mad. Well done, Alex. Good deduction.
Thank you.
Very good.
Well done for knowing that as well, Martin. That's an obscure fact. Unless you're Nepalese, obviously, in which case everybody knows it.
Exactly. Question two. In US combat history, what did Operation Red Dawn refer to?
US Red Dawn.
Okay.
Red Dawn.
I have the high ground.
Yes.
So, basing my knowledge purely on the title of a film that I haven't seen, I'm going to say it's Countermeasures for a Soviet Invasion.
No.
Darn it.
That's such a good guess, though.
No, very good, though. Very good. Yeah. That would have been very good, because I understand what you're going for there. But it's not. Okay. It was that name was used. It was used with the Red Dawn bit.
US combat history. I don't know enough about US combat history to really tell. It's fermented in the bottle. Was it some kind of Vietnam invasion?
Ooh.
No. Oh. No, it wasn't. I'll give you a clue.
Yeah.
It's 21st century.
Okay.
Okay.
That's the first clue. You might need another.
Yeah, because Iraqi freedom was the whole invasion of Iraq, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In 2003.
Mm-hmm.
What else has America done?
What else have you done?
No,
I have the high ground.
Oh, the... Robin. I forgot what my buzzer was.
That was Robin.
Is it Syria?
No, it's not Syria.
Oh, right. The French...
Yes.
Was it the military operation to kill Osama bin Laden?
No.
That was a good guess.
Well, it wasn't that. Okay, third clue. And this is buzzers. Well, be quick on your buzzers.
Fingers on buzzers.
It also involves a notorious figurehead, but the other war.
'Tis a Californian champagne.
Alex.
Saddam Hussein. Something with him. Insurgency tactics to get Saddam Hussein.
Yes. It was to capture Saddam Hussein. Operation to capture Saddam Hussein. It led to his capture.
Well, they did it, actually.
Yes. Yeah. It led to his capture. But it started in 2003, the operation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Named after that film, Red Dawn.
It was actually named after... Oh, for crying out loud, America.
It was named after the film, yeah.
Oh.
Question number three. A trico-Saigon has how many sides?
Oh, the French. 37.
No.
Trico-Saigon. How's that spelled?
T-R-I-C-O-S-A-G-O-N. Or Trico-Saigon? Trico-Saigon? Trico-Saigon?
Well, I don't know how to say that. I mean, it's three something. So, I agree with you, Alex, there.
Is this going to be a closest wins type deal, or is this a...
I have the high ground.
Yes.
30.
Robin.
30 sides.
30.
It's not 30.
Are we in a ballpark? Are we close?
Sounds like a no.
I take that as a no.
I have the high ground.
Yes, Robin.
300.
No.
Oh.
That's mental. 300 sides. Why would that even have a name?
It just becomes a circle at some point.
I mean, would you like me to give the Greek cardinal number?
Oh, I'd love for you to. Thank you. What's that?
What?
Would that help?
I don't know.
It can't hurt at this point, so go ahead.
It won't help at all. I'm not even sure I can say it. It's called a trisk. Okay, I'll just spell it. T-R-I-S-K. Yeah. A-I-E-I-K-O-S-I.
What?
Okay, let's move on to question number four. The answer is 23.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, question number four. Still 2-0. What year did Elvis die?
Oh, man.
Oh.
Closest wins. Let's go for closest wins.
Oh, this is embarrassing. Well, he didn't actually die, Martin, so he's still alive.
Well, that's the question, right?
I have the high ground.
Yes.
1975.
Okay. Alex, do you have a guess?
I was actually thinking mid-70s. I'm not just trying to be a dick.
Can I say
1973?
It's 1977. Robin wins.
Fair.
Close.
2-1.
Nicely done.
Well, yeah, I picked 75 because it's in the middle. I was like, Alex is going to... He's got 50-50 chance of getting it wrong.
Yeah. Okay, 2-1. Question number five. Name three animals with eight legs. Now remember, be careful, because if you name some of them, then you're giving the other person a few clues, right?
That is true.
Oh, that's so true, yeah.
Three different animals with eight legs.
Oh, I know... I know two of them. I know two of them, but I don't want to give that to Robin.
That's the thing, right?
I have the high ground.
Yes, Robin.
This is wrong. Well, this isn't wrong. Spider. That's correct. Spider?
That's correct.
Oh, that's the one I wasn't thinking.
Lobster?
I don't think so.
I have to have a look. No, that's probably wrong.
Ooh. Yeah, no, it's right. Lobsters have eight walking legs. Yes, they do.
I'll take that if you're going to give it to
me. Yeah. They do have eight walking legs. I didn't know that. And then they have the big claws at the front.
Yeah.
So they're 10-footed, but they have eight walking legs. So I said legs, so.
Okay, nice. Shrimp is my third one.
I have to look at that one too, mate, because I didn't
know that one. Weren't the answers you were expecting.
Does shrimp have eight legs?
I'm saying.
Is that a thing? Is that a thing that you actually know?
No, this is really, really... This is difficult now, because... It now says, I've Googled it, okay? And it says shrimps have eight pairs of legs.
Oh, that's not eight legs, is it?
That's not the
same.
That's
16 legs, yeah.
Oh, the French.
But then even that's disputed by someone else. So yes, Alex.
Okay, spiders.
Yes.
Lobsters. Scorpions.
Correct, very good. 3-1, question number six. Who is the longest serving monarch of all time?
Oh, the French.
Alex.
Okay, you didn't specify the UK, which I immediately jumped to really quickly. Elizabeth II. I'd said that weirdly. But...
Wrong. Oh, she's like number mind. Four. Oh. She's got a little way to go.
Longest serving monarch of all time.
Yes, of all time.
All time.
In history.
Yeah. That's a...
Is it going to be something weird like Kim Jong-un's grandfather, because he's technically immortal and never died? He just transcended this plane of existence.
I have the high ground.
Robin.
I don't have a name. I was just going to say, like, the King of Denmark.
It's not the King of Denmark, no.
Can I have a clue?
Yeah, sure. Okay. I'll give you two clues.
Oh.
He was
very generous.
He was only 4 years old when he came to the throne.
Yep.
And shall I give this clue now? Yeah, why not? He was French.
Oh.
I have the high ground. No, that's yours. Oh, the French.
That's utterly confusing. Go for Alex.
It's just such a catchy one. Louis the Fourth.
No.
I have the high ground.
Robin.
Louis the 14th.
Yes, Louis the 14th.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you.
You need to add another 10 years on, another 10 digits on. 14th of May 1643 to the 1st of September 1715. Amazing. 72 years and 110 days.
That's amazing.
Long time. I think our queen's at 68 years, I think.
Yeah, she's 53 so she's when she was coronated. So 52 when she became queen. Yeah. Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. She could do it. She could break the record.
Mm-hmm. Could do. Okay, so that's 3-2. 3-2, question Ooh, number 7. Yes. Now, this one is worth 3 points.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa.
But I'm going to go for each one in turn. You understand what I say, okay? So these are company and brand slogans.
Okay.
You have to guess which brand it is from the slogan.
Okay? Yeah.
Okay, so A is Taste the Rainbow.
Skittles. I have a high ground.
Oh, no,
I
have, Robin. Sorry. Robin. I totally messed that up. no, go on. It's my bad.
So eager.
So.
I don't like the vocal buzzes.
Rob, what's your answer, Robin?
Is it Skittles?
It might be Skittles, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Okay. I feel bad about that. But...
No, I think you knew that anyway, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. The stupid thing is that when you shouted it, Alex, my brain immediately went, oh, I knew that one too.
Oh, goodness. Okay. So,
I'm going to buzz in next time.
So that's 3-all. B,
yeah.
Part B. B is Think Different.
I have the high ground.
Oh.
Robin.
Is that Apple?
It's Apple.
Yeah.
Takes the lead at 4-3. And C, Don't Be Evil.
Oh, the French.
Alex.
Google.
It's Google. Yes, Google. Which is kind of ironic, but hey.
Yeah.
Is that still their slogan? I thought they changed that.
No, well, it's, yeah. I mean, I didn't say it's current slogan.
It's Alphabet Incorporated.
It's still, it's still used in their, I don't know, their induction pack.
Their ethos, yeah.
To be fair, though, I don't think Google are inherently evil.
Nah.
If you're listening, Google, please reward us with algorithm and stuff.
Exactly, yeah. With algorithm.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm still recovering from that.
Covering is that four all? Skittles.
Is that
four? It's four all. Question number 8.
Wait. What?
It's four is all. It? It's four all.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it. I'm not convinced, but sure.
Well, you gave me Skittles very kindly.
We can go over questions if you like.
No, that's all right.
No. If you're confident,
I think I'm pretty sure it's four all.
Yeah.
It's when it comes to it now, and I'm doing the scoreboard, and it's like, yeah, it's not four all. This part's cut. question number 8. What is the American word? I've written down world. That's all wrong. What is the American word for courgette?
Oh, I have the high ground. French.
Oh my goodness! I think it might be an Alex Just.
Oh.
Zucchini.
It is zucchini.
Damn you!
It is zucchini.
I have watched my fair share of the Food Network.
Yeah, you know all about American cooking.
I've seen Diners, Drive-ins, and Dives. Yeah, not that zucchini ever really featured on there. Yeah.
Although some of it does feature on there is why is it known in the UK as coriander? What's it known in other countries or in America?
Oh,
coriander.
Coriander. Yeah. It's known as something else.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't a bonus point, by the way. It's just.
I didn't know there was another word for it.
Cilantro or something?
That's it, yes. Yeah, it is.
Coriander.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's the one.
Mm. Well.
Yeah, learn something new every day. 5-4 to Alex. Question number 9. What is the fastest animal in the sea?
Hmm. Oh, I should know this.
On land is often referenced, but not in the sea.
In the sea, yeah.
Oh, the French.
Yes, Alex.
I'm going to go for the killer whale.
It is not the killer whale.
I have the high ground.
Robin.
Is it something like a swordfish?
Hang on, you can't ask that.
Okay, is it a swordfish?
It's not a swordfish.
Yeah, okay. I'm pretty sure I know this from, you know, from a good David Attenborough documentary, but I can't at all remember.
Oh, the French. Is it a tuna?
No. Do you want me to give you a clue?
Yes, please.
Do you want to have a guess first, Robin? Before, because I've had two guesses.
We've had two.
Okay. Fine. Yeah. A sea lion.
No. Okay. It's incredibly similar to a swordfish.
It's just not.
It's just not your Attenborough knowledge is right, but it wasn't a swordfish. But it looks very similar.
Is it like a household name? Would we have heard of it, or is it some kind of obscure thing?
You might have heard of it.
I have the high ground.
It's not weird. Yes.
Marlin?
No. Again, no. But it's the same.
Same, yeah.
Yeah.
Not just a guy called Marlin, by the way, for our listeners. Marlin is a type of fish.
Don't know my fish that well. I've seen the seen ocean.
Yeah, it's the other one.
The other one.
The other one.
I think I can see Marlin, it in my head.
Swordfish, and then this one.
I've seen Finding Nemo. I've seen all the hits. No, I don't know. I don't know.
No.
I'm not sure I'm going to be able to remember, sadly.
No. It's called a sailfish.
Sailfish?
Oh, no. I wouldn't have got that.
Yeah, I can see it. But yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah.
Good question, well,
apparently
though.
nearly 70 miles per hour. Very quick.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, very,
you
very
could
quick.
Not dodge that thing coming at you.
You could not. Okay, 5-4. It is.
Still no pressure.
Question 10.
You can still bring it back.
Okay, question 10. What are the names of the two bones in the forearm?
Well,
the two bones in the forearm.
I'm surprised. Robin.
Is tibia one of them?
I believe that's in the leg.
Damn.
Tibia. I think it's tibia and fibula are in the leg.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Right, well, yeah. Wrong limb. Fine.
Okay. The French.
Yes.
Going by that logic that the tibia and fibula are in the leg, I'm going to go femur and femur.
No, femur's also in the leg.
Yeah, femur's the thigh bone, isn't it?
It's the big bone.
Well, I don't know. I'm not a biologist.
I can't name any arm bones.
The wrist.
That's not a bone.
No. The wrist is made up of loads of bones.
Where's the funny bone?
That's your elbow, isn't it?
Yeah.
Your humerus.
That's the humerus. Yes, I can name that one. Thank you.
There's one.
Oh, is that one?
It's actually one.
No, it's not. No, the humerus is... The humerus is your... It's like the equivalent of your... We're saying fibula. It's your big bone in your arm, I believe.
Oh, okay.
I think that's right. That's what I know.
Is there a clue that might help?
Yeah, it's your big bone.
I know it's tough with names
of things. Not really.
Great.
I mean, if you guys really aren't sure and you think this is a bit of a damn squib, then I can change it to something else if you prefer. A different bone that you might get.
I mean, is there no clue?
Actually, that's okay. You can just leave.
Yeah, Alex is happy with this because he's got the lead. Is there
one of them?
Yeah.
If we don't know the answer. We don't know.
One of them is another name for a measurement. So you have a circumference of something. Yeah.
I have the high ground.
Yes.
Radius.
Radius is one of them.
Yeah. Do I get half a point?
Yeah, but it doesn't help.
It doesn't.
You can't half. The other one. Trying to think of a way to describe this one. No, I don't think I'm going to be able to.
It's a tough question.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Mm.
I mean, yeah. I might just have to let you guys know this one. Apologies, Robin.
That's all right.
You know, a chance. Right. Alex, but it's the radius. It's the radius and the ulna, ulna.
Ulna.
Ulna. Yeah, radius and ulna.
Which one's which? Like, there's a short one and a big one.
I can't remember because when you turn your arm around, they like, move, don't they? yeah. I don't know. Look up a skeleton. You'll find out.
I'll go check an one image I've got in my closet. Yeah,
exactly, an image. if your palm's facing down,
yep,
the radius would be on the outside and the ulna on the inside.
Okay.
Oh wait, hang on. I'm looking at a diagram that says the exact opposite.
Oh really?
Wow.
Oh no, no, you're right. Radius on the outside, ulna on the inside.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, learn something new every day. Know what I'm using for next week's podcast? This week I learned.
Well, thank you for that, Martin. That was a very good quiz.
Well played, Alex.
I very much enjoyed that one. Obviously.
Yeah.
Thank you. Very close. Good game, Robin.
Well,
good game.
You gave me a point, so thanks.
Very good.
Well, it was, you know, it was mutually. You gave me a point as well with the lobster, so call it even.
That's true. I mean, I've just realised that the bonus question. I decided to make it. I did the quiz first. I decided to make the bonus question my what I learned this week. So this will be a test of memory from earlier on in the.
Okay.
That's interesting.
That's very interesting.
And I didn't actually mention this exact number. I only mentioned the rough number. Okay.
I've already forgotten your story. So
okay. Yeah, so this relates to the Vesna Volovic. Her falling on the plane,
yeah.
Okay. So to the nearest, in feet, how far did she fall?
Oh, the French.
Yeah.
Yes, Alex.
33,000 feet.
Robin, any advance on 33,000 feet?
Oh, I thought that's what I remember too. Yeah, 33,000 feet. Yeah.
In fact, 33,000 feet was what I said. It's actually 33,330 feet, but that's a tongue twister. I'm not doing that.
Oh,
that's a great.
So you lied. You just lied.
so 1 point each. Well done.
Oh, that's very kind. That sounds a bit like a joke, because it's like, how do you know exactly how far she fell? And someone's like, 33,333 feet. Yeah.
yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Diminishing her. Yeah.
Wasn't there a case where someone was measuring a mountain and it actually came to like 12,000 feet or something, like an exact number, so they added 2 feet onto it just so it made it look like they didn't round it up?
Weren't bullshitting.
Yeah.
Nice.
I like that.
You find that story for next week. That sounds interesting.
Cool.
I mean, you've said it now, but yeah. It is what it is.
I'll find the story for next week.
Fantastic. Anyway, thanks, guys.
Thank you. That was a good quiz. And well done on your another victory, Alex. Oh.
Fourth in a row, I believe. What's going on?
It's happened.
I know. I had a bad losing streak, and now I'm on a pretty solid winning streak.
Solid winning streak.
Counting my blessings.
Yeah. In fact, if you want to learn more about Vesna Volovic and her falling out the plane, that is the Patreon video. It wasn't earlier on in the podcast.
That's a good point.
If you want to see Martin lying through his teeth, about the height that she fell from, check it out on Patreon.
Yeah. Do head on over there, check it out. Let us know what you think. Thanks for joining me, guys. It's been a pleasure
as always.
And we'll see you next time.
Yeah, take care, everyone.
Take care.
Have a good week.
Bye-bye.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.